Hey guys.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Two Men and a Baby.
Yes, that one.
I planned that so long ago. I've been thinking of that moment for a while, so I'm really glad that it went off without a hitch and perfectly and not awkwardly at all.
But we are back with another episode. Today we're going to be talking about our top 10 musicals. And then we're going to be talking about a couple of James Wan's films. His first feature film, Saw, and his brand new film, Malignant, which is in theaters and streaming on Early Access now, if you're still interested after this. So to start off today, we have our top 10 musicals. I'll let you go ahead and start off with your number 10. This is a topic that I've been, you know, Haven and I have been passionate about musicals for a long, long time. And you've kind of gotten into the musical fan base more recently with your girlfriend. So I'll let you start off with your number 10.
All right. My number 10 is Into the Woods. And okay. It's not because, like, the movie, really. It's because the normal soundtrack. And I think it's... Is it done by Stephen Sondheim?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Into the Woods is Sondheim.
Because, like, the music, like, the songwriting, everything is amazing.
Yeah.
It's all great. It's so witty and fun, and a lot of it feels kind of, like, satirical at times, and it's just a ton of fun. I love it.
Yeah. And Into the Woods was one that I considered putting on my list. It kind of got bumped to, like, an honorable mention status, I guess. But, I mean, a lot of Sondheim does. I think... Sondheim is just one of my favorite musical composers in general, but I think Into the Woods did not make the cut, but Sondheim is on the list. My number 10 is Wicked.
Ah, that's a good one.
Which I mentioned to you before, I haven't mentioned it on the podcast, but I had actually done this list maybe like 3 years ago with Haven, and I think that's actually up on the podcast, if anyone's interested in going back and looking at that one to spot the differences. But I had actually done this list like 3 years ago with Haven, and Wicked was higher up. I think it was at like number 6 or something. And I think part of that is just due to the fact that then we were focusing more on Broadway specifically. And this one we included like just kind of musicals in general, whether it be movie musicals or whatever.
Yeah.
And so Wicked got bumped down to number 10. But I mean, if you know, you don't even have to know much about musicals to know that Wicked is a highly popular and influential musical. The music and the lyrics are all very well done.
Yeah.
And the charisma of the Broadway cast just really brings it to life. Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel, the way that they performed it is hard to beat.
So something that I might have been a little confused on, I didn't know we were also including Broadway musicals. I would have put a little bit more on there.
So you thought it was only movie musicals?
I thought
musicals?
It was only movie musicals.
Okay.
Yeah. But, so yeah, that would have, you know, your child's making some noise over there. That would have been, that would change a few things up. I probably should have asked, but I just kind of like assumed. My bad. Whoops.
Not a big deal.
Okay. But that's okay, because I still got 10 musicals on here.
Yeah.
And I'll mention like the ones that I would have put up there like, in a little bit. My number nine. God, I forgot my numbers. It's 9 in the morning. My number 9 is Sweeney Todd.
Okay.
Sweeney Todd's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, come on. There's no way around it. I have not seen the movie, but I listened to the soundtrack.
Okay.
And I got
for the movie or Broadway?
For the movie.
Okay.
And I got what feels like a good amount of the story out of it. You know, I enjoyed it. I thought it was really fun. I thought it was really clever. I like in the beginning when the kid is singing about London. He's like, there's no place like London.
Yeah.
And then Johnny Depp just comes in like, no, there's no place like London. Like trashing it and stuff.
Yeah.
Super fun.
No, Sweeney Todd is one of my just absolute favorite musicals in general.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to pop up higher on my list. But I actually did a thesis on the differences between movie musicals and Broadway musicals. Uh-huh. And I used Sweeney Todd as like my primary example of like the way that the characters are portrayed, but also just how exuberantly they're displayed in the Broadway, like the way that you sing on Broadway and how underplayed and toned down it is in the movie with Johnny Depp's performance. It's really fantastic just seeing those differences, but also just, I know that Tim Burton and Johnny Depp would have probably teamed up regardless.
Yeah.
But Johnny Depp's performance in this is just top notch.
Yeah. And it's super fun too, to think about how like, a lot of the people that were cast in this, like, Helena Bonham Carter. I hate her name. I'm sorry. I love her. She's a great actress. I hate her name. But you know, a lot of them didn't have like any sort of like musical training. It's same with Alan Rickman. It's like had nothing. I looked up some stuff about the movie. And yet they're still able to pull off these great vocal performances. Yeah. It's really fun.
Well, and it's kind of funny because Helena Bonham Carter's character specifically was kind of called out for the her lack of singing ability.
Really?
And I never had any problems with it. I feel like she was maybe a little bit more dramatic, a little bit more theatrical than the others, but I think that's what her character calls for.
Yeah.
But I never had any problems with the way she sang it. I think she's got a decent enough voice to pull it off.
I thought that she was better than Johnny Depp in a lot of instances.
But that was one of like the primary complaints about the Sweeney Todd movie was Helena Bonham Carter's voice, which I never understood.
Had to recheck focus there. That's very odd, especially considering like how I feel like Johnny Depp sometimes kind of, you could feel like the gruffness in his voice. I guess that's supposed to like come through in a bit,
yeah,
because the character he's playing, but I don't know, it doesn't sound as like, as you know, well done for a musical as I think Helena's voice carries or lends itself to. So, I don't know. I prefer Helena in it, but I think Johnny Depp still does a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. My number 9 is Shrek the Musical.
I've seen that. I love it.
It's so good.
It is awesome.
And, like, you know, Shrek has kind of become, like, a weird, like, cult internet icon.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Man, that thing is loud sometimes. Don't have kids. No, that's a mean thing to say. I'm sorry. I'm just kidding.
Shrek has kind of become like an internet phenomenon. Like he's reached like a weird status.
Yeah.
In general. And so whenever it was announced they were making a musical, it didn't feel like it was really worth any sort of fanfare. It kind of just felt like a little bit cringeworthy.
A little bit like they were trying to bait on that kind of meme status that he has.
And then it came out and it was actually like really good.
Yeah.
Like it's funny and heartfelt and I feel it captures the movie, but also like in some ways even just improves on the movie.
Yeah.
I enjoy the musical more than I enjoy going back and just watching Shrek.
Yeah. The like Lord Farquaad in that musical is amazing. He's
yeah.
He really steals the show for me.
Yeah.
I really love Farquaad in that. I like that he just like sits there. He's like on his knees the entire time. And he's got like the fake tiny legs that he kicks around. That's so fun.
No, that's my number 9. It's a lot better than it has any right to be.
Yeah, very true. Okay, so I'll go to my number 8, and that is Inside Llewyn Davis.
Okay.
Yeah, really folky, sad sounding soundtrack. A lot of kind of country undertones to it, like folk country-ish music. And I'm not a big fan of that kind of music usually, but I think like it fits so well and it puts you in such like a vulnerable emotional state.
Yeah.
That, you know, it works and it's great.
Yeah.
Oscar Isaac. I'm not entirely sure if that's actually him performing it, but if it is, like he does an amazing job.
That's
very good.
I kind of just forgot about that movie and like I enjoyed it when I saw it, but I haven't seen it in a long time. It kind of fell to the background for me, but yeah, I remember really enjoying that one. My number 8 is the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, which is, again, kind of one of those things. It is. It's another one of those, not in the same way that Shrek is weird, because, you know, Shrek, like I say, was kind of like an icon that should not have made a good musical. Yeah. This just, it kind of came out of nowhere, and it turned out to be, like, so, so good. But, like, it's really kind of, like, funny and heartwarming. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really have any expectations for it beforehand, you know? Yeah. Like, my thought before hearing any of it was, like, they made a musical about a spelling bee? Like, what are you going to do with that? Like, how are you going to make that interesting? But it is. It's, like, listening to it, it's actually, it's, like, really funny. And it's just, it's entertaining all around. But it's almost, like, unexpectedly entertaining. Yeah. So that's my number 8 is the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
That's really fun. Have you seen Child Abuse the Musical? This might be a bad time to bring it up while you're holding a kid. It's Matilda. But
oh, that one.
Yeah. That one was really fun. Saw a part of a slime tutorial on it. Whoops, hit the table. And it's you know, the slime tutorial, you know, like the whole like it's just a bootleg of a musical.
Yeah.
Wasn't the best, you know, production value wise because it's being recorded on like a camcorder. But like from what I did see, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun, so I think you'd probably like that. My number 7 is La La Land.
Okay.
Really energetic and jazzy.
Yeah.
And then you get to like those like slower, sad moments as you like wind down the soundtrack. That mm-hmm. final song. Maybe not the final song. I don't remember which one it was. But it's later on in the soundtrack where, what's her name? It's that scene where Emma Stone and, like, Ryan Gosling are looking at each other, and then, like, they see, like, how their future goes throughout.
Yeah.
And then it cuts back to, like, reality and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. That one hits. That's a good one. Yeah. My number 7.
All right. My number 7 is The Muppets. And I went back and forth about whether to include, like the kind of the revitalization of the Muppets from what was it like 2011 or the original from the 70s and I ended up going with the revitalization because that's the one I tend to go back to, maybe partially just because I'm a teacher and that's the one that like modern students will kind of be in tune with a little bit more. But I love kind of that like sometimes like subversive humor, mm-hmm. That mixture of like just family humor, but with sometimes slightly more adult humor, but also just like the enthusiasm and the optimism. Like it makes you feel good watching it, but it's also like very funny. And I just got a soft spot for the Muppets.
That's adorable. My number 6 is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Okay.
Yeah. That's really fun. Really a lot of rock, a lot of like kind of in your face fun like tongue-in-cheek lyrics
mm-hmm.
that I can't recommend more. I guess so. The whole movie is just great.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World is what started the argument with my wife about what constitutes a musical. Because she was trying to make the point that to be a musical, the music, like the lyrics had to somehow tie into like the characters' motivations or like what they were doing and like push the story along. Yeah. And she's not nearly as big a fan of Edgar Wright or Scott Pilgrim as I am.
Yeah.
And so I tried to explain to her that like that's essentially what's happening. Like it's not in the traditional, you know, it's not like the character comes up and sings about what their heart is feeling and, you know, the like what they're going to do next on their journey or whatever the case may be. But it definitely has those moments where the songs that are being sung or the music battles are what's pushing the plot forward.
Yeah.
And so essentially I think even by her definition, Scott Pilgrim versus the World is a like movie musical.
Yeah.
Just not necessarily in the sense that some people might classify it.
Yeah. I'd say so.
So that was your number 6.
Yep.
My number 6 is School of Rock.
Yo, nice.
And I mean, you can kind of take your pick. Like the movie version obviously has been around longer. It's got that cult following. It's kind of the more nostalgic one.
Yeah. I've heard the musical is like really good.
Yeah. The actual musical, they added some songs and expanded on it. And that's also a really excellent way to experience the music of School of Rock.
Yeah.
But I think either, you can't really go wrong with either version.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. No, I completely agree. School of Rock is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see how I feel about it later on in the list. My number five is Tangled.
I love Tangled.
Tangled is one of my favorite, I think it is my favorite Disney movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got one of my favorite soundtracks.
Yeah.
Probably wouldn't be on here if I had like been like, hey, yo, is this, what kind of musical you mean?
Yeah.
But still, like, I love it. It's awesome. Like, there's not a whole lot more to say about
that. Yeah, no.
Everyone's seen Tangled.
It's pretty great. My number five is In the Heights, which, again, I think you could kind of pick and choose whether you like the musical on Broadway or the movie version that just came out more.
Yeah.
For me, I still prefer the... They changed some lyrics and some plot points for the movie.
Baby's eating her fist over there.
Yep. They changed a little bit for the movie, and I prefer the original.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe partially just because of the nostalgia of it.
Yeah.
But it's an excellent hip-hop musical by Lin-Manuel Miranda. It was his first breakout, like before mm-hmm. Hamilton was a thing and before he became like a household name.
Yeah.
In the Heights was like a really big deal on Broadway.
Yeah.
And I think it's a little bit more personal and heartfelt.
Mm-hmm.
Where like Hamilton is really good, but I feel like Hamilton has reached that that like social level where it almost became like overwhelming to me, and I started kind of like purposefully backing away from it a little bit.
Yeah, too many people like talking about it at once and making it. Like,
yeah, exactly. Thing. And you know, on top of that too, like I kept getting tired of the conversations where people would, they'd kind of be like, you know, oh, I love musicals. You know, musicals are great. And I'd be like, oh, cool. Which musicals do you like? And they'd be like, well, Hamilton, or like maybe like Hamilton and Dear Evan Hansen.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's it. And that's like the only thing they know. And I'm like, but what about all these others? And they're like,
I don't know, bro.
Yeah, but what about Hamilton? You know, and it's like, well, you know, if you like those two, you might like all these others. And they're like, no, we don't care about this.
Yeah. Don't be ridiculous, Tyler. There's only two good musicals in the world. You
know
that, right?
Well, and I mean, they're both excellent musicals, but they kind of reach this fever pitch where it becomes a little bit like, you know, okay, like let's move on, you know?
Yeah, come on, guys. There's more than that.
Yeah, and so for me, In the Heights, I think, steals the show, first of all, because I kind of like the personal nature of it a little bit more,
yeah.
But also because I started feeling a little bit of fatigue with Hamilton.
Yeah, completely understandable. So my number four
mm-hmm.
is one that I, like, really love. It's Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, I love that, with Neil Patrick Harris.
I argued with myself about whether to include that one on my list or not.
Dude, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous and like and just like all, it's just one big joke kinda.
Mm-hmm.
But they make it like so heartwarming and endearing how like, oh, this poor little supervillain, he's like, he really like loves this girl and all that. But he's also still a villain and all the thing. Like it's a kind of a typical thing that you'd expect. But
yeah.
It's done so well by Joss Whedon and what's his name? That I just said his name. NPH.
Yeah.
Like, it's great.
Yeah. No, I agree. That was your number four?
That was my number four.
My number four is Scott Pilgrim vs. the World.
Yo.
Hey.
Your baby's having a meltdown.
My number four is Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. I mean, we kind of already said how we feel about it, but yeah, it's one of the most immaculately done, like, I guess, comedy rock musical movies.
Rock midi,
yeah,
is the technical term.
But there's a lot that plays into it, but it's a very like nerd driven like rock musical, and it's so well done.
Yeah,
I don't have a whole lot more to say than you had said before, but yeah, it's my number four.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. In every way possible. My number three is Sing Street.
Yeah.
Sing Street is an Irish musical. It's about like these kids just trying to start a band. It's adorable. It's so like heartwarming and maybe like, you know, one of the most fun ones, but like still kind of occasionally a little depressing kind of with some of the stuff with the family matters. Yeah. And Peter from Game of Thrones.
Yes.
You know, but really great. Really great. Highly recommend.
Mm-hmm. Have you also seen Once?
I have not.
Once was the first musical by the same crew that wrote Sing Street.
Yeah.
And it's also very well done.
Nice.
I mean, I have a lot of respect for Sing Street too. Like I said, it almost made the cut, but I kind of bumped it to an honorable mention.
Yeah.
But they have another musical called Once that's also really excellent.
Yeah.
So I definitely recommend checking that one out too.
Is Once one that's like that show? Is it like a show, I think?
It was originally a movie. It was presented the same way that Sing Street was. They made it into a Broadway musical as well.
Oh, cool.
So that one's actually got like the Broadway cred to it.
Nice.
My number three is Next to Normal, which, are you familiar with Next to Normal?
I have never heard of it.
It's a really excellent, sometimes, so, and depending on who you ask, it can cause a little bit of controversy. But I always compare it to Dear Evan Hansen.
Yeah.
In the fact that it's got its humorous moments, but it's a very serious musical that covers topics like mental health and how to cope with grieving and things like that. Mm-hmm. Essentially, it's about this family who's dealing with the fallout of losing one of their children and the way that they cope with that. And the mother is on a lot of drugs. She sings like borderline kind of like lustful songs to her psychiatrist, not because she's actually interested in him, but because they almost like romanticize her relationship with drugs.
Yeah.
But not in a positive way. You know, it's very much shown to be like a negative track, kind of like they do with Requiem for a Dream, kind of that same feeling that you get.
Yeah.
It's kind of a tough musical to digest, mm-hmm. but it's done really well. The music and the lyrics are very well done.
Yeah. Oh man, that's pretty nice. What made you that? That sounds really good. If I knew more about it, I'd be all I'm all over it, buddy. But I'm sad. Sorry, I don't. my number two, dude. I feel like a fool. Being like you're over here with like your musical purist things, and I'm like, hey, I really like Tangled.
Well, but too, like I said, I've had a lot more years of experience and a lot more time to kind of digest all these different ones, because you know a lot of these I grew up with too.
Yeah.
Or not grew up with, but you know it's like a lot of these, like Next to Normal, I think was like 2009 or something like that. So it's like, you know, a lot of these I just kind of learned about as they came out, and you're just kind of like diving into this world over what, the last year or two?
The last year, yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't fault you for, I mean, the choices you're making are really good choices. I just got kind of like a wider breadth of experience.
Thanks, man. my number two is Moana.
Which is also great. No, Moana is actually my favorite Disney movie musical. It's like it's fantastic just as a Disney movie and as a musical.
Yeah, I agree. I think Moana is a great movie, but I also think it has the best music they've ever had in any of their movies. Like, it's insane.
Which, again, is going to cause a lot of controversy, but I agree.
Yeah, no, like, I don't see how you can disagree. Like, every single song is so iconic and catchy.
Yeah.
So Moana, best Disney musical in any way. Mm-hmm. Not my favorite Disney movie, which princess-wise, that would go to Tangled. But I really love the music in this. Every single song is catchy. I get excited when it comes on.
Yeah.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson does amazing. Mm-hmm. And so does the lead girl. I have no idea what her name is, but she's great.
Ali'i Krivalio.
That one.
I think I pronounced it a little bit wrong, but yeah, that's her name. Sort of.
Whatever it is, you're great. Thank you.
My number two, or did you have anything else you wanted to say before I I move on? Okay. My number two is Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
Nice.
And again, you know, some people prefer the Broadway, some people prefer the movie. This one I do prefer the movie. You know, yeah. Sometimes you get those like snobs who are like, you know, oh, the Broadway is always better. Just like you have your people who are like, oh, the book's always better. You know, whatever the case may be.
We call those people nerds.
But this one I do prefer the movie. I think that the dynamism, is that a word? The dynamics.
Sounds fake, but I'll let you have
it. Of the movie really highlight his plight a little bit more, where like I said, in the Broadway version, the actor's name who originated it was Lin Kariu, and he's got this big booming voice, which is incredible, but it's always kind of like this big booming voice. He doesn't do kind of like the subtle moments as well, I feel like, where the movie, they've got such an excellent cast with like Johnny Depp and Alan Rickman and Helena Bonham Carter, Sacha Baron Cohen, you know, like all these people that can really highlight their roles a little bit more, the highs and the lows, that the subtle dynamic is a lot more important to me than that like big booming Broadway dynamic. And I think that it's a more complete experience in the movie. But the music is just about perfect. I don't have a lot more to say than it's really excellent.
Stephen Sondheim, man. And like Johnny, like you were saying, Johnny Depp's voice kind of sounds like sorrowful, you know, sorrowful in a way. And that like kind of like lends a lot to the character being like, oh, my wife, my Joanna. You know?
So now, we don't have like a big fanfare or anything, but are you ready for your number one?
Ready for my honorable mentions title.
Oh, honorable mentions.
Yeah, who do you think you are?
A guy who's rushing into his number one.
You must be really excited. But what, do you like musicals or something?
No. Musicals are for nerds.
Learning, and I like that. Alright, so my honorable mentions for best musical. okay, so I had to add a couple. So Star is Born, A Star is Born, any of them really. But I do like the modern one. Aladdin, great. Guy and Madeline on a Park Bench. High School Musical, Walk the Line.
Really?
Yeah, I love High School Musical. I love, I genuinely enjoy the songs in the first one.
Okay.
Second one, they have good songs, but like I'm more, you know, partial to the songs in the first one.
All right. I'm not going to go further than that. I'll let you have it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyways, I feel the judgment on his face. Newsies. Love Newsies. Newsies is maybe my favorite musical.
Okay.
Like, you know, like Broadway-wise.
Yeah.
That one's like, it's so fun. The production is like insane with all the moving pieces and everything they have.
Yeah.
With the sets. The guy that plays Jack is like so fun with his accent, and so is Crutchy. Really great. Wicked is awesome.
Yeah.
Absolutely love Wicked. Hades, Town of Hades. That one's super fun. That one's got my maybe my favorite production design of any of them, with the like twirling set and all that. SpongeBob the musical, really fun. And of course Shrek the musical. So yeah. Yeah, that's right. You're all mentions.
Yeah. I was just gonna say my some of those I agree with. I also wanna add, just if nothing else than just for the legacy it left, I need to add Rent. It's got great music and it definitely made its mark on musical theater in general. There are some songs that I like better than others. That's one I feel like is maybe, at least in my mind, a little bit less consistent. I feel like there are some songs that I'm just kind of like, oh, okay, and I skip past it and get back to the songs that I like. But it's you know, that's up there with like almost like Wicked level, like,
oh yeah,
just famous musical.
Everyone's heard about Rent.
Yeah. But that's the other one that, thinking about it, that's the one that I was like, I need to make sure that one's at least mentioned in the honorable mentions. But yeah, I'll let you go ahead and do your number one.
Thank you. So my number one is School of Rock. I watched it recently with my girlfriend, and we were both just like mesmerized by Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp, oh my God, Jack Black.
Yeah, I knew what you were saying.
Talking about the Sweeney Todd, you know?
Yeah.
But Jack Black has like this just energetic presence to him, and it's like he's so
he's like
to watch.
He's such a weird enigma because he will take on the best roles and just the dumbest roles all at the same time. Like, he's not super picky about the movies he's taking on, but he throws himself into the roles that he is given, you know, and sometimes it works out where it's a School of Rock and sometimes it works out to be a Gulliver's Travels, but,
Year One.
Or Year One or Shallow Hal, or, you know, you can
name all these. Are you telling me you don't like the masterpiece that is Shallow Hal?
I am. I can honestly say that I did not like Shallow Hal.
Was it Gwyneth Paltrow?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
That was so weird.
Yeah.
That was so weird.
It was a strange movie, and it's very much a movie of its time.
It feels mean.
It does. Like, it was, I think, one, it's weird, because it's trying to have, like, a good message at the end. Yeah. It's because, you know, like, the final scene where he's like, hey, you're still beautiful, and they, like, ride away into the sunset together.
Yeah.
I think it tried to kind of redeem itself, but it really is just kind of like an hour and a half of, like, fat shaming.
Yeah.
And then they try to, like, bring it around and be like, no, actually, it's totally fine. But, you know, it's all in good fun, right?
And when you say, like, a product of its time, that makes sense. Because, like, so many of those movies back then are just, like, they're just so mean.
Yeah.
But they're, like, they kind of try and mop it up at the end and act like they didn't just, like, just slander people for the past like hour and a half.
No, and it's kind of a hard thing because Haven and I went and watched it probably just like a couple months ago or something, and we just, it's like, it's uncomfortable, especially like in today's climate, just the way everybody is about being so, like, politically correct and not offending anyone and all this. The fact that it's basically like an hour and a half of just, like, fat jokes. And not even, like, against a lot, like, you know, both genders or all kinds of people. It's legitimately, it's fat shaming women.
Yeah.
Jack Black, I mean, he's kind of, like, gained and lost some weight throughout his career.
He's, like, pudgy, if anything.
Yeah. Even in Shallow Hal, like, you know, he's maybe not as pudgy as he was in some other movies, but he's a heavier set guy still.
Yeah.
But he's fine. They don't say anything about him. You know, they kind of make him out to just be like a normal guy looking for a girl. But then they play his love interest as just like...
Like the chair, like, folds underneath her.
Anytime she sits down in a restaurant, the chairs, like, break underneath her. And, like, there's... and that's like a running gag. Like, at one point she's in a booth and the entire booth, like, collapses under her. And then there's another scene where, like, they go out on, like, a river boat together where they're rowing, and you see, like, her side of the boat is, like, sinking, and his side of the boat is so far up in the air that he can't even touch the water with his oar and stuff like that. Like, and it's just, like, a running, like, that's what it is. The whole movie is just one gag. But then at the end, they try to bring it back around, and he's like, once he sees her for who she is, he's still like, oh, but you're still beautiful and I still love you.
Actually, I don't hate fat people.
Yeah. And we've gone off on, like, a weird tangent here about, like, Shallow Hal, but
maybe that's, like, a topic for another time, because we could probably dive into, like, this genre as, like, this subgenre.
We could just do Farrelly, like, Brothers movies.
True, yeah.
And just the weird impact that they had for their time, but then how they don't work anymore.
Yeah, no, I honestly don't find them funny. They're not funny. When I was a kid, maybe. Now, no. They're just stupid.
Yeah.
Like, and that feels mean to say sometimes, but yeah, they're just...
Yeah.
It's a Farrelly Brothers movie.
Mm-hmm.
Green Book. Dumb.
but point being, yeah, it's like, Jack Black, he throws himself into every role that he's given, but, you know, he has his movies like Shallow Hal, and then he has his really high points like... School of Rock.
Yeah. And one thing that I noticed in this one, because I hadn't seen it in a few years, and like, I noticed, like, way more of the technical aspects of it.
Yeah.
How, like, Richard Linklater kind of, like, puts a lot more of, like, a fun, like, kinetic, like, spin on, like, a lot of the camera work.
Yeah.
And how, like, the music is, like, used and laid throughout. Like, it's so great, especially in, like, the ending concert scene.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, anytime when they're, like, you know, recording, like, in the classroom, the camera's, like, constantly, like, moving around, like, you know, capturing a lot of the different band members in, you know, in frame. And it's, like, it's very, it gets you in that kind of, like, headspace that you're, like, oh, I'm watching this band being formed. They're, like, you know, I'm part of the band. It's so great.
Mm-hmm. And my number one, which is kind of ironic considering the way I was talking a little bit ago, but my number one is Dear Evan Hansen. I think that for the for all of the social climb that it has made since it came out, it is one of the most accessible and relatable musicals that has ever been released.
It takes
like these very like hot button topics. I feel like it's kind of poised to become like the next Rent, where, you know, Rent was very much, it's a product of its time that still holds up. Evan Hansen is very much a product of today. It touches on these ideas of like loneliness and anxiety and grief and just needing to be seen and heard and all these things that, especially like teenagers are struggling with, and puts them in a way that everybody can kind of understand and relate to in some way. Just how it hits home is not just like touching, but like kind of important right now. And I think it's very smartly written to be accessible, but it's also very heartfelt. It's not just written like to make a message, like we were talking about in past weeks about how some movies just become like message movies. This is written very heavy-handed, but it's done in a way that it's still entertaining and touching, rather than just feeling like it's hammering you over the head.
I've heard a few of the songs because Greer would like play them in the car occasionally, because she loves Dear Evan Hansen. And we're probably gonna see that soon, like when the movie comes out. We're definitely gonna talk about
that. That'll be on the podcast in what is it, 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
The movie comes out on the 24th.
So if we like both see it like opening weekend, it'll be like 2 weeks from now.
And that should be like, that's gonna be a fun episode. But I don't know a ton about it, but from what I have heard and been told about it, it's very, very touching topics, but like done in a way that like is resoundingly hopeful in the end, I guess.
But there's also, my understanding is that they've made some significant changes to the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I don't know how much you want to delve into this, but if you're interested in like listening through the entire like Broadway version and kind of getting a feel for it before watching the movie, that I think that'd be an interesting thing to discuss too, is just how much it's changed.
Oh, that's going to be fun. Yeah, so definitely should do that then, too. Maybe we'll see both the musical and the movie.
But yeah, so that was my number one is Dear Evan Hansen, even with its kind of fever pitch up to the kind of collective id.
I guess we got that out of the way. So this is segment one.
with that out of the way, now we're moving into our larger segment about James Wan.
Best movie ever made, Malignant.
Well, how about we start with, do you want to start with Saw, or do you want to start with the more recent movie?
Let me tell you, it would make a whole lot more sense to start with Saw.
So first we'll discuss Saw, which is James Wan's first feature film. They were fresh out of college. Him and Lee Whannell had like this tiny budget to make a feature length. And they only got that because people did not have faith in them. They kept getting shut down because the script was deemed as too awful to film and put forth until they filmed their own short. It's only like 6 or 7 minutes long. But if you know anything about Saw and you're familiar with it, it's a short segment where Lee Whannell plays a character that gets put in a game where he's caught in the reverse bear trap and he's trying to escape. And that segment that they recorded is almost like shot for shot redone with Shawnee Smith in the actual Saw film. Her scene of the reverse bear trap is almost like verbatim to Lee Whannell's original pitch video. And so they got a very small funding to make this, and they filmed it all.
Very small. How much did you say it was?
I think so. The studio funded, I think, like $25,000 or $30,000, something like that. And then there were like charitable donations. Some of it was their own money. Some of it was money from like family and friends. You know how it is when you're making your first movie. you kind of just pull in funds from wherever you could.
Yeah.
But needless to say, it was a shoestring budget, and they were, they filmed all in like one warehouse location. Mm-hmm. They had the outside of a warehouse and an indoor of a warehouse that they could work with. So they were shooting all of their scenes in chronological order and then tearing down that set, putting up a new set in that same warehouse and filming all of those scenes in chronological order, then tearing them down and setting up a new set.
Yeah.
So that they could film it with the least amount of headaches.
Yeah.
And then after the fact, they had to significantly change it because it ended up getting an NC-17 rating. Not even necessarily for gore, because for all intents and purposes, the first Saw was not like the disgusting gore fest that like the series kind of devolved into. The original is kind of a whodunit thriller. Mm-hmm. The MPA deemed it as too like dour and just like tonally disheartening. And so they gave it an NC-17 for like the visuals and the tone. And so after they had created this like passion project, they ended up having to kind of like back off on some of their own directing choices. They had to even it up and take out some of the sharp cuts and edits to make it seem a little bit more like mainstream, because yeah. it felt like overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And so I've seen both versions a handful of times, plenty of times. You had seen the original, just like regular theatrical cut.
Like once.
Yeah. And then I showed you the director's cut, where they added back in some of the more stark lighting and some of those sharper cuts and edits to kind of get the original vision back into it.
Yeah.
Because that's fascinating to me, not just here, but just in general. Mm-hmm. Cause I'm hoping eventually whenever we do, whether it just be about the Alien movies or maybe just a retrospective on Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
But I wanted to kind of do a similar thing and talk about like the director's cuts versus the theatrical cuts of like the Alien films. There were a lot of changes that had to be made. And so I think a lot of my perception and rating of this movie is based on the director's cut, the original vision for the movie, rather than the theatrical cut. But with all that said, we have the WAP Master. If you're not familiar, if this is your first time tuning in or you didn't see the last episode, the WAP Master is our custom ranking system, WHAPMASDER, and we'll go over each of those as we get to them. Mm-hmm. First up is W for writing. For writing, I gave Saw a 7. I think that there are moments that are you can kind of laugh at. But considering this was like a passion project that, you know, they were writing as like college film study kids, and on the budget they had, I mean, it's cohesive. Mm-hmm. It moves the plot along and a lot of it works fine, regardless of the couple of clunkers.
I gave the writing a 5.
Okay.
And it's mainly because like there's moments where like you get a piece of dialogue that's just like, what's your name? My name's very fucking confused. What's yours?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you get those moments, but then you also have the screenplay, which is able to still tie in all these like different twists and turns between the different timelines, which is really impressive. Like you said, like, and cohesive for like a student film. And this does feel very student film-esque. Mm-hmm. It really does. With like all like the big scope they're trying to get into. They do fit it. They fit it like very well and tightly into like this world and narrative that they're building.
Yeah.
They're able to put it all in there. But some of that script, that script sometimes is just like, what?
Yeah.
Like, it's a little typical at times, and that draws it back. But still, like, the screenplay to an extent saves it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a very smartly written screenplay for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that's one of those things that over time it devolved into the twist ending of the first Saw became such a staple that there had to be like a twist ending for every Saw movie.
Yeah.
And as they went on, they got more dumb and convoluted. And they started, you know, calling back to previous movies and previous villains, people that you haven't seen since like the first movie or two, all of a sudden pop back up in like the seventh movie, you know, as like a secret behind the scenes mastermind this whole time. And, you know, so on and so forth. And it all so gets convoluted. Very dumb as you go, not to mention just, the movies in general just get bad. They stop being intelligent and start just being how much pain can we inflict on our actors and the audience.
Yeah.
Not worth watching past, I'd say, like maybe the second or third one. Ooh. But the first Saw, I feel like, is a very underrated film. Mm. Next up is H for Heart. For Heart, I gave it a 5. I couldn't really go higher than that, as much as I kind of personally enjoy the movie. It's like we were saying, it's very dour, very downtrodden. There are not a lot of redeeming characters, and that's something that as the plot goes along and the twists are kind of revealed and stuff, you realize that everybody has their secrets, everybody's kind of a bad person.
Yeah.
And at the end, there's not like a hopeful ending or any sort of redemption. It's like, it's even at the end, it's all left very... very dark, and there's kind of this like vengeful vigilante justice kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
Which if you know anything about Saw, you kind of know the idea about taking your life into your hands and what will you do to survive and overcome. Got a very twisted sense of like morality and like learning to appreciate your life.
Yeah.
That doesn't really play well. So I went middle of the road with it, but I couldn't really go higher than a 5.
Yeah. I was going to go middle of the road on that one. But then, I started to think about, like, how, like, the passion and heart that James Wan and Lee Whannell put into it themselves. Just from, like, a kind of a technical to, like, a meaningful aspect for them.
Yeah.
And that kind of bumped it up 1 point. So I gave it a 6.
Okay.
Based off of everything that you just said and also off of, the love that those two had for their project going into it. Yeah. Clearly they loved it to an extent.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Go ahead.
A is for acting, and I gave the acting an 8. I think that some characters, not as much, like Cary Elwes, not so much.
He does not care.
But I think, again, it's like we were kind of saying with Jack Black. I think Lee Whannell is one of those people that just really throws himself into the roles that he's given. Mm-hmm. And I kind of love his just like even with those like clunker lines, I think he throws himself into that role and he plays those lines just as much as he can. He milks it for all it's worth. And, you know, like Danny Glover is fine. Is it Danny Leung?
Something Leung. I don't think
Derek.
It might be Derek Leung.
Anyway, I think the police officers do the best with what they're given. Lee Whannell does very good. Tobin Bell,
he doesn't really show up in this much.
Yeah, he's only at the very end, but he's got that line delivery and very that mold. Presence at the end that I think it's very impactful for the twist. Mm-hmm. It's very well done. So I especially considering, like, keeping in mind, like, the budget and what they were working with and the fact that the entire movie was pretty much filmed in one or two takes. Yeah. Because they were in such a rush, the whole movie took, like, 2.5 weeks to film.
Oh, Ken Leung.
Ken Leung.
Yeah.
I gave it an 8.
Oh, man. Okay. So I gave this a 4.
I kind of wondered if that's where it was going to go.
Yeah. Cary Elwes and Danny Glover feel like they just don't care at all in this. Danny Glover is, I know that he's supposed to whisper his lines, but the entire time he's just like, oh, now I see you. Oh, man, I bet you don't know I know you're in there kind of thing.
Yeah.
Ken Leung, he's fine. Ken Leung seems like he actually like tried to an extent. Lee Whannell definitely tried. Mm-hmm. Lee Whannell put it, like you were saying, put his heart and soul into it. That's where the script falls apart for him because, like, you know, the script does not go good with good acting.
Yeah.
And for the most part, he's pretty good. He's probably the best part in the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then you cut back to Cary Elwes, and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That line where he's like, I'm going to kill you. What was his name? What was the guy's name?
Zep.
That's what it is. Zep.
No, it's definitely Zep.
It's Zep? Oh yeah. My goodness, there's no way.
Because that's the name of that iconic, you know that Stinger?
It is Zep, you're right.
That Stinger song, like the kind of iconic theme from Saw, is called Hello Zep.
Okay. Zep. Zep, he's like, I'm gonna kill you, Zep. You're off, touch my family. And then his wife's like, Lawrence, and he's like, Allie?
But it's like, so aggressive too. It's like both extremes. Like we both kind of stopped and laughed at it because, you know, he's like, I'll kill you, I'll drag you down and all the, you know, like for Cary Elwes, it's very aggressive. Because yeah. Knowing him from like, you know, movies like The Princess Bride and
there's always that kind of like stoic, calm character.
Yeah. He kind of has that like British gentleman kind of feel to him. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, it's very much like kind of this like American like revenge, you know, like he's got this like bad American accent too that he's trying to put on, and it's all very much like, I'll take you down, Zep, you know, I'm gonna come and get you. And then as soon as she talks, it's very, it's like so timid. It's not even like Cary Elwes timid. It's like, Hallie.
That was like a perfect impersonation of that. But yeah, like when you bring up the accents, they're like literally immediately in. You can hear that these two main actors are not American.
Yeah.
You can immediately hear it. Like, words in probably every single scene slip out. And, like, in, you know, Lee Minnell's Australian accent or Cary Elwes's British accent.
Yeah.
Immediately. And there is, like, it's so insanely obvious. And I just, it takes me out of it a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I do not like the acting in this movie at all. I think it's bad. I genuinely think it's bad. But yeah, you want to go to the next one?
So P is for production design. For production design, I also gave it an 8. I think that this is, especially considering the budget they were working with, this was a relative strong point for them. Everything does look really disgusting, really dingy, really dirty. Yeah. And again, you know, their costumes don't really take much. They're both just kind of wearing street clothes, but the sets that they do have, considering how they were treating their sets and the fact that they just had a warehouse to work in,
yeah,
they look fantastic. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate just how good the sets were.
Yeah.
Aside from the super generic like police station as yeah. just a room with some windows and like a couple of desks, and they're yeah. like, boom, done.
It's
policeman.
Insane how much that room comes in his movies. It's
yeah.
so weird.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more in Malignant. Yeah. But yeah, it's kind of the exact same thing as any other cop room that you've ever seen. Right down to the, he's got like a bunch of like old timey monitors, like cathode ray tube monitors on his desk, and there's an empty donut box and a cup of coffee and like the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
But I think especially the primary bathroom set especially is just so, so grungy, and it looks like, it looks authentic. It's mm-hmm. very well done.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I gave it a 7.
Okay.
And like you were saying, the fact that they were able to get all this done in like one warehouse
mm-hmm.
with the like small budget they had, with all these sets, is really impressive.
Yeah.
It's really cool that they were able to like fit all this in.
Mm-hmm.
I think like, I really love the bathroom set, of course, but another one of my favorite sets is like the, when they had the chase scene with Tobin Bell,
mm-hmm.
with Ken Leong and Danny Glover.
Yeah.
Like running through there. I thought like it looked generic kind of in a way of like what you'd expect like a serial killer lair to be in like a 2000s horror movie.
Yeah.
But it's still like it works so well for this movie.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy like, you know, that set with all like the cobwebs and stuff around, like the mm-hmm. the random pieces of wood and 2x4s like laying on
yeah.
the ground. It like it works. It looks like you know, where a villain would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed it. Then, you know, you also have like the car chase, where like, you know,
it's literally
like
just
saying,
a black
yeah.
background. They couldn't afford to film on location or anything. So when they were filming a car chase scene, it's just them sitting in front of, it's them sitting in a car and everything around them is black and they're pretending to drive because the cars were just inside the warehouse where they were filming.
Yeah.
And so they tried to make them look like they were driving intensely in the dark.
Yeah. It's hilarious. It's really funny. But, But yeah, like moments like that are like little hiccups, but for the most part, like they do a really great job with what they have.
And yeah,
I'm really impressed by it.
Yeah. So next up is marketing. For marketing, I just straight up gave it a 10. I feel like the posters, and I mean, you know, it's been a long time now, but as I remember it, the posters were everywhere, and it was like the very iconic. They were either posters of the Jigsaw puppet,
yeah,
or they were posters of like kind of a like a dirty, like dusty hand or a foot or something like that. And then you watch the trailer, and the trailers portray it as just like this like scary, grungy, like horror fest. And I feel like they could not have portrayed this movie better than they did. As far as marketing goes, I think they were spot on with the mood they were trying to get across.
I'd say so, yeah. Like you were just saying, I've always really liked the posters for this movie. I thought the posters were like, as a kid, they terrified me and mm-hmm. made me not want to watch them. I was not a big horror fan as a kid. And yeah, so those have always like stuck with me.
Yeah.
And they always get like a fun like original ones that they make for like new Blu-ray releases and stuff.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Trailers, like you were saying, like they're intense. Like the
yeah.
trailers are like a lot. And yeah, and they hype you up and they make you a little afraid.
Yeah.
So I gave this an 8.
Okay.
I like the marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Audio. This category is about orchestration, songs, sound design, things like that. I gave this an 8. I think that's another like really just relatively a very strong point. It uses those like very iconic stingers in the trailers. That it also uses in the movie. The music is very intense and very like overwhelming.
Yeah.
It definitely gets you into that feel and that atmosphere. Mm-hmm. The music definitely enhances the movie for me.
Yeah. I give it a 7.
Okay.
You know, like I'm not a big fan of like the loud, grungy, like metal rock stuff playing.
Which again, yeah. It does fall into that trap a little bit, but it's not as much in the first Saw as you might come to think with like the franchise.
Yeah.
It definitely gets more into that. Again, once you get into like the third, fourth, fifth, there's so many of these movies now and they just kind of delve more. They lean into that more as they go. But the first one, going back, even just the last few months, I've seen this movie twice just in the last like 3 months,
mm-hmm.
Once with you, Garrett, and once with my brother-in-law, Garrett. And
better, Garrett.
And both times it's kind of surprised me how like kind of restrained and intelligent this one is comparatively.
Yeah. The music doesn't really take anything like a ton away from it. It's just not really my thing. But
yeah.
I think it lends really well to their editing style,
mm-hmm.
and what they're going for with that grimy like grunge feeling, and,
yeah,
and like it's perfect for like, you know, what they set out to do. They do a great job like picking their music there.
Yeah.
And also really like I told you while we were watching that I really like the more like quieter scene with like the little suspenseful kind of like
mm-hmm.
Stinging music in the background. I thought that was like really cool.
Yeah.
Some of the ADR was really bad, especially with Lee Winnell at times.
Yeah.
That was not very good. But you know, for the most part, it was fine. You know, there wasn't like any real problems with the like actual like sound design or sound mixing or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was good, solid 7.
Yeah. For S is for shooting. This is the cinematography. I gave this one an 8 as well, which I think is kind of like an underappreciated part of at least the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's whenever we were talking about, especially the director's cut.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the complaint a little bit more, I think, with the theatrical. But I was trying to like point out different things to you as we were watching the director's cut. First of all, about how like whenever they're focusing on Dr. Gordon, they try to take a more like even approach to it. So it's all like on tripods or mounts,
yeah,
and rigs. And then for Lee Winnell's character, it's all very, it's shaky, like hand cam and stuff like that to show that he's like less stable and less like he's more emotionally charged during those scenes.
Yeah.
The kind of like stark, like color contrast, those like, those bright like clinical white lights in the bathroom versus almost like that like murky green and some of the other traps and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they made a lot of smart choices to portray emotion and atmosphere in here that kind of go underappreciated.
Yeah, I think so. Something about James Wan's directing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you woke up just to tell us about how you feel about the directing in James Wan's movies.
Something about feet. She's holding her foot.
The feet in his movies?
Really, there was like one shot where I don't remember which one it was. But, no, it was Saw, because Carrie Elswit like picked up like his daughter's foot or something like that. And I just immediately had like Quentin Tarantino flashbacks being mm-hmm. like, ah, feet. Oh no. I was getting a little scared there for a second.
Yeah.
James Wan has always had like a really distinct visual style. And your baby's staring at me now, dude. Mm-hmm. I get like,
she's listening. She's our audience.
Thank you, Luna. She's the most of our views. but like, he's always had a very distinct visual style. And so like, and you kind of see that popping up a little bit in this, where like you have like the really harsh shadows in a lot of scenes, like with Lee Winnell in the moment where he's like walking through his house and he's like taking pictures around like with the flash trying to,
yeah,
you know, put a little bit light like into the room so you could see. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the shadows are like super dark. And and then like you were saying, with the green tints in a lot of like the trap scenes, the yeah. stark white in the bathroom, very distinct, very noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
And then like you do have moments with his I really love his handheld style.
Yeah,
I think that he does a really good job kind of like putting you in the shoes of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Making you feel like you're there. And especially with Lee Winnell, and it's really fun with it. Like, oh, and but the reason it's 7 and not like higher is because, like, you know, of course, for like a $20,000+ budget, it's not going to be like amazing.
Yeah.
So like, you know, you get the good for like, you know, what they paid for. Like, it's definitely solid.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, 7.
Yeah. So next is D for directing. I gave his directing a 7. Because I think, like we were saying, even more so than like with the writing,
mm-hmm.
I think that James Wan had a very clear vision about what movie they were making, and he followed through on that really well. He falls into the same traps that would end up kind of becoming his signature over time. As far as like, so in the original Saw, some of those like crazy like quick cuts and fast motion where you see people like shaking their heads and screaming while there's like flashing lights and stuff.
Yeah.
They did that because they needed to pad out the movie a little bit, and they were recycling shots because of the yeah. budget and stuff. But then that ended up becoming kind of like a signature of the Saw films and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And something that, unfortunately, even as a well-known and renowned director, he kind of fell back into some of his bad habits with Malignant. Yeah. But, I think it's at least identifiable filmmaking, for better and for worse. I think you see some of his good and bad filmmaking habits here, but I gave his directing a 7, just
yeah.
considering the restraints he was working with and the fact that he was a first-time director. I think he did what he intended to set out, yeah. what he set out to do really well.
I also gave his directing a 7. I think that, like, I'm not a fan of the style he was going for in this, but it was definitely a distinct, unique vision that he was able to like get onto screen and mm-hmm. and pull across, and he's able to, like, you know, keep us engaged with these characters and like make this timeline, this time jumping all yeah. like still coherent and make sense throughout the entire film. Because like in a lot of these, it's so ambitious that you feel like you'd probably get lost.
Yeah,
most of the time, if it was like a lot of other filmmakers, but he's able to pull it off here.
Mm-hmm.
It's really impressive. You know, directing actors wise, not the best, but I think you know, for a first time director, definitely really solid. So yeah, definitely a 7 feels good.
For the editing, I was maybe overly generous with this, but for the editing, I gave it an 8. I think
that's stupid.
I think that, well, I think again, whether you like it or not, this movie kind of set the standard for this kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
Those, like I was saying, those quick shots, those quick cuts with like the fast motion, the stark lighting, the crazy like jump cuts and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
even if you don't like them, I kind of have a respect for the fact that they caught on so well and became so synonymous with, like, the Saw franchise and just that style of filmmaking.
Yeah.
That it became kind of like its own subgenre of horror. Like, you can immediately identify it. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something to be said for that.
Yeah. So I gave the editing a 4. I'm on the not, like, side of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to give it lower, but I was like, it's unique.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 4. I really hate the quick jumps, the loud, like, sounds and music and all, like, the stupid... I'm sorry, I'm gonna get mean about this. The really dumb, what do you call them? Like super speed things.
Yeah.
Fast speed. I can't think of the word. Sped up moments.
Yeah.
And like those aren't fun. I don't find those fun. I find them jarring. I find them intrusive and annoying.
But I think that's.
And I really hate it.
I think that's kind of what he's going for. He wants it to be jarring, right?
Yeah, but it's not like a jarring where I'm like, it's so sick. And, oh, geez. It's a jarring where I'm like, well, can this just end? Like,
yeah.
I want this to be done. Mm-hmm. And you also have, like, transitions that are, like, really weird and odd, like, different cuts. And there's a transition between, I think it was Danny Glover in, like, the...
give you that one.
And then Carrie Elswith's car kind of, like, comes into frame.
Yeah.
And it cuts to a new scene with Carrie Elswith. And it's,
but it's like a close-up, too. It's like, it's not even like a...
It's a close-up on both of them.
Yeah, it's not even like proportionally correct.
No.
It's like a close-up of...
Actually, it's a close-up on Danny Glover's like a face.
Yeah, on and then you see, like, Danny Glover's, like, massive face get kind of scrubbed away in the windshield. And then, like, a mid-shot of, like, Carrie Elwes's face instead.
Yeah, no, it's very... It's a lot of odd editing decisions here, but I guess, like, again, they're trying to do something unique and different with the budget that they're working with. Like, it makes sense that they try and go, like, you know, so odd with it.
Yeah.
But I'm not a fan of it. I don't like it at all. So,
yeah.
4.
And finally, the R is for reflection. For reflection, I gave it an 8. I have a soft spot for at least this first Saw movie. If you couldn't tell by just the way I've been talking about it, I've kind of got a fascination with the filmmaking process behind it and how it was executed.
Yeah.
As well as kind of a fascination with how quickly it went downhill and how it morphed from like this kind of whodunit thriller into just a celebration of awful things.
Mm-hmm. It is like really surprising that they were able to milk this franchise for like 6 or 7 movies. Like I did not expect that. Like,
there's more than that now with kind of
that's right, Spiral and like
the spin-offs and reboots and stuff like that. I think we're closing in on like 10 films.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
And it took like a lot of other movies like Halloween and Friday the 13th and all those like a lot longer time to get.
Yeah, a lot of those have been like 70s or 80s, and this has almost 10. I think it's on its like 9th or 10th iteration now in 15 years.
Yeah,
ish.
Oh my god. It's really like the movie frustrates me.
Yeah.
Because like there's things I like about it, there's things I can appreciate about it, and I really enjoy like hearing about the behind the scenes and all that. I think it's super interesting the process that they did, like they went throughout this. But there's just stylistic things that are not for me in this. So I give it a 6.
Okay.
But like, I still can enjoy it. I can have fun with it.
Yeah.
For like, you know, what it's showing me.
Mm-hmm. All right, so with that said, my final WAPMaster score for Saw ended up being a 77.
Oh, nice. Mine ended up being a 60 on the dot. Yeah. It was originally a 57, and then I started to like, think about the marketing. It's like I was, it was like right after he texted me at like 8-something,
mm-hmm.
and I had like an alarm set for 8:30, and I woke up to it, and I saw a text. I was like, all right, I'll be over soon to record. And then, like, I was like, oh, dang, I gotta watch trailers. So, like, watch the trailers, and I was like, oh, that's right, yeah, okay, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that's, like, it bumped it up a little bit for me. But, yeah, so 60
and right. 77.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a little bit more of, like, a sentimental and nostalgic factor for me.
Yeah.
But I rated it significantly higher, but I completely understand where you're coming from. Yeah.
These Saw movies just like aren't for me. I'm not a big fan of like the like torture things. Even if this one's not even really torture.
No, it's not. That's kind of what I keep trying to get across to people when I'm talking to them. I'm like, the first Saw is really not what you think it is.
It's definitely a thriller.
Yeah. It devolves so fast, but it's not what the franchise makes it out to be. Mm-hmm. The first Saw is a genuinely interesting movie.
Yeah. So I can definitely appreciate it for that, but then, like, you know, you have just the things that I'm not into. Like, I'm not, I'm just not the person for this movie.
Yeah.
And, plus because, like, I didn't, like, I grew up with them coming out. I did not grow up, watching them. I just, like, you know, I didn't want to see him. I had no interest in it.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, it's a little bit late to, like, you know, for me to get, like, super into it. But.
So, speaking of not being the kind of people for a movie, next up, we're also going to talk about Malignant, which is James Wan's brand new film. It's been in theaters and on early access for 2 days now. And we watched it here together, just like we watched Saw here together. And we have... probably a similar number of things to say, but I feel like probably a lot less complimentary ones. So we'll hop right into it with writing. The writing for Malignant, I gave a 4.
Really?
I think for all of... I feel like just about every line that was spoken, acting aside... just didn't feel genuine to me. The way that she spoke to her, I don't know if it's a boyfriend or a husband.
I think it was a husband.
But like the way she spoke to her guy didn't feel like the way actual couples talk to each other.
Yeah.
The way that she talked to her family did not feel like the way families talk to each other.
No.
The way that, even like the way that the villain talked and stuff didn't feel like the way I feel like a villain would talk. Like, nothing played right for me. The only reason it scored as high as a 4 was because it did, like, move the plot along in a way that I could understand.
Yeah.
It was cohesive, and the plot did go places.
Yeah.
But pretty much all of the writing was bad.
Mm-hmm. I gave the writing a 2.
Okay.
Because, like, they'll have, like, the dumbest lines in this movie. Like, what was that line at the beginning where she walks in and she, like, walks into, like, the room with her husband, and her husband's, like, watching UFC, and she turns it off, and he's like, babe, I was watching that. Mm-hmm. And she's like, not around the baby. He's like, well, you chose to be pregnant or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, so stupid.
This this is, he's like, this that was your choice.
This is all 5 minutes in.
Yeah. Then also within minutes of that, like... almost a few minutes after that, at the end of that same scene, her name is Madison in the movie, but everybody calls her Maddie. Mm-hmm. And at one point, I thought that he said, you know, like, well, okay, fatty. And there was a part of me that's like, I wouldn't have even been surprised if that was the line.
Yeah,
like,
right?
I know that he said Maddie because that's her name, but I was like, considering the way the dialogue has gone in this movie so far, it would not have surprised me at all. Because the husband is not understanding. He's a cookie cutter character. He's the annoying husband that sits around watching fights and drinking beer. And he doesn't understand like that she's pregnant and he needs to be like understanding of that. And he's just like, he's mean to her and wants to be left to his own stuff.
Yeah. I love his this might like lead a little bit into production design a little bit, but this is just like a quick thing.
Yeah.
I love that he's like one of those derpy husbands that wears like a flannel and a white shirt underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
That's always how they seem to dress them. It's so ugh god. But yeah. And then like not even there. That's early in the movie, that's like maybe 5 minutes in.
Yeah.
Even before that, when the doctor comes in and she's like, time to cut out the cancer.
Yeah.
And all that. I can't do a British accent. And like then you have moments where they dump exposition. Where it's like, they literally do the thing where the sister is driving in the car and she like calls people and she's like, I figured it out. This is the malignant thing. The killer is a part of Maddie and it's like in the back of her head and stuff like that.
Spoiler alert, so by the way.
No one cares.
We're not going to recommend you see this, but if you're going to see it, just a heads up.
It's so stupid. Just don't watch it. Like, honestly, it doesn't seem worth it.
No. Which is surprising. The reviews are surprisingly kind to this movie, and I don't understand how.
Like, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of James Wan anyways. I don't give the Conjuring movies a big score, a high score. I think I gave, like, the first one a 5.
Out of 10, right?
Out of 10, yeah. Like, it's like a 2.5 out of 5.
It's such a tricky thing because, like, you know, everybody's ratings are different. It's like some people it's 5, and some people it's out of 10, and some people it's out of 4. And so it's like you always got to specify because, you know, 5 could mean a perfect score or it could mean a half score.
Yeah, if you're one of those people that pulls a Roger Ebert and does that a 4, I hate you. Don't do that. That's stupid. Why would you do that a 4? It's so dumb. But yeah, and I think James Wan wrote this, right?
I think he was with someone else, but it was screenplay by James Wan and company.
And Akella Cooper.
Yeah.
And Ingrid Bisu.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. James Wan cannot write. He cannot write dialogue. He cannot write any sort of, like...
And I feel like he should have some awareness of that by now. Like, he's had enough years and enough movies that even if he's not self-aware, other people have seen enough of his movies to kind of understand how his writing normally is.
Yeah, he's, like, over 15 years in. You'd think by this point he'd get, oh, man, I don't know how to write a straight sentence for someone to say. Like, you can't, James. And, like, in this movie, it's so obvious. It's so... The cops are cops. The cops are generic cops.
Yeah.
The sisters are generic sister characters. The
Everybody mom, is a cookie it's, character.
It's exactly what you'd expect it to be, but it's all delivered terribly.
It doesn't make you feel sympathy for anyone. It doesn't dive into their characters. Everyone is what they have to be to drive the plot.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so that's why this is a 2. It's awful. It's terrible, honestly.
For Heart, H in Wapmaster, I gave it a 3. I feel like even more than Saw, there is nothing redeeming or even interesting to gain from this movie.
Yeah.
It's just, it exists.
Exactly, yeah.
The one small favor, and the reason I bumped it up from a 1 to a 3, is because they do like kind of a fake out where they make you think that the mother and sister have both been murdered. And I was like, that's it. This is going to be it. I'm just going to give it a 1 and move on. Yeah. I'm mad about everything. And then that turned out to be like a fake out, like a vision. And she's able to like save her family.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I guess I'll give it a couple of points for like trying to like save her family and give it a hopeful ending. Yeah. But
No, I still don't care about these characters at all. I give it a 1 because like it feels like not only do these characters not have any real meaning behind them and that you like you have no feeling in any specific way towards these characters except for frustration and anger maybe.
Yeah.
And then it also feels like James Wan didn't care about this movie. It feels like he was just like, I'm just going to make a quick movie. Like it felt like any like direct to Netflix like without any real like you know actual like vetting behind it kind of movie like it's terrible. It is, the heart is just not there. No one cared about this movie in any way.
Yeah,
like, well, I guess probably people did, but it doesn't show in the final product at all.
Next up is A for acting. I gave this a 2. That's it. Acting is bad. There's not.
Yeah, I felt kind of bad, so I gave it 3.
Okay.
Like it's. If you just gotta watch 5 minutes of it, and you'll get it. Like there's not much more to really say. Like the acting is awful. No one in this is good. Like there's not one moment, and that's kind of weird to think about how no one in an entire movie is good. And part of that is probably also due to the script. That's why I gave it like a little bit of a leeway.
Yeah.
Because the script is so bad. But oh my God. Oh my. If you think like if people have been in movies before and just, like, seen movies, you kind of get like, oh man, this ain't going good.
Yep.
No, it seems like they're just blissfully unaware the entire time.
Yeah. Well, and I liked the acting was bad all the way through, but I liked how there's a point where they put the main character in jail, and we were like sitting there like going through them as they're kind of like talking, as she's like talking to the people in the jail cell, and as they start kind of like getting mad at her and kicking her and stuff like that, we were going through and just like pointing out all of the cliches and stereotypes, like, oh, there's the prostitutes, oh, there's the druggies, all those, the unfairly jailed minorities, you know, like so on and so forth. Like, yeah. even like minor characters are just very much like there to be a stereotype. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing as far as the acting or the script that really redeem any of it.
And a lot of it leans into production design, which is our next tip.
Yeah.
I segued that perfectly.
Yeah.
And that is a 4. Because I think that the costumes and all that, and most of the sets are so stupid, mm-hmm. but then like also kind of like the underground city part.
Yeah.
I thought that was like at least a little interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the house was all right, you know, it wasn't crazy, but the 4 seems fine because of how bad most things are and how okay at best some mm-hmm. of the other things are.
I agree completely, but I gave it a 3 instead of a 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nothing more to say.
Yeah. A lot of it is also like the stupid decisions that they make with that. Now, this will go on directing. I'll wait until directing.
Yeah. Next up is marketing. I mean, I gave marketing a 6. I think as far as the stuff in the movie, and especially after knowing what the movie was, marketing almost deserved a little bit of a higher rating.
Yeah.
Because looking at it, it at least makes it look like a competent like horror thriller.
Mm-hmm.
I think the trailers are just about the best you're going to get from the movie.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit more generous with that because I think the before watching the movie was the best part of the movie.
Yeah. I completely agree. I gave it a 5 though.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I'm not a fan of James Wan's stuff already,
mm-hmm.
so like, you know, I'm not gonna like rush to see the new James Wan movie if it wasn't for like the podcast.
Yeah.
But because, like they have that like that name attached to it, that like the newest movie by James Wan, you know, it's gonna get like more, it's gonna get a lot more like people into the theaters. Luna, why are you so upset about me talking about James Wan? Why is she such a James Wan diehard?
She's just mad that we're bashing on him so much.
Man, of all people.
You gotta understand the meaning behind it.
Did you not watch Aquaman? Really? Oh, now she's smiling. Okay, that's adorable. Okay, but yeah. James Wan, you're waiting until I talk so you can start talking, aren't you? Is that what you're doing? Okay. Alright, thank you. So, yeah, because they had, like, his name attached to it and all that. And I like the posters. I think the poster on Letterboxd is, like, really cool.
Yeah.
Luna, chill. But, like, it's not, like, you know, it's nothing crazy. Like, the trailer looked pretty typical, I guess. But it made it look better than the movie actually was, that's for sure. So, you know, yeah, 5.
All right. Next up is audio. I gave the audio a 5. I think that was another one that was almost like conflicted with itself.
Mm-hmm.
It had some really good, I think, orchestral moments, but then it fell into James Wan's own like bad style of like for every like good kind of like intense score. There was a moment where you had like some lady tied up in the attic and there was metal music playing while the villain was like sharpening his weapons and stuff.
Yeah.
And so audio kind of went middle of the road for me.
Mm-hmm. Audio also went middle of the road for me too. I gave it a 5. It's geez, you are just like all about it today, aren't you? She's like babies are funny.
Yeah.
But I gave it a 5 because like the sound design and mix is all right, and then like you do get those like stupid moments of metal music that don't fit at all.
Yeah,
especially like contrasting with that like nice orchestral music that you're talking about, like in that scene where she's running around trying to like lock all the doors and close the windows and all that. I don't know why she decided to close all of the curtains before she went to lock the door. Mm-hmm. That was stupid. But, you know, she does that, and the music is playing in the background. It sounds good. It sounds good, like good horror music.
Yeah.
And then you get to the scene where the lady's in the attic and you have the metal music and all the quick cuts and all that. Completely out of nowhere in this film. It makes no sense for that to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have like the weird sound design moments where like they, like in the beginning, the very beginning, where they're the like people are break, the person's like trying to like break out of the hospital or whatever, and they break down the door, that constant like doom sound comes in. Like this, there's a police officer that like lays down like a dart gun case, and like as he's like unclipping it, it makes the don't don't sound.
Yeah.
And the one that you brought up with like
there's the bad thing at the time, you're not supposed to know what it is, but it flings a security guard. It flings a security guard out through a door, and it does it when he hits the wall, and then immediately whenever he hits the floor again, like right in succession.
It's so stupid. I don't understand how you can put so many of those right at the beginning of your movie and not take it as a joke.
Yeah.
And not like not mean it to like not be serious.
Yeah.
It's genuinely stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. 5 because of good moments and a lot of bad moments.
Mm-hmm. Next is S for shooting, the cinematography. I gave the cinematography a pretty generous 7. Mm-hmm. Because I think that it had its moments of inspiration where you can see the James Wan that they hired for like The Conjuring and Aquaman and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were some very good shots, especially like exterior shots, like of the property and stuff like that, that served their purpose really well. Yeah. And some of the transitions were really cool. There were moments that we were talking where like, as it was happening, I just kind of stopped and I was like, oh, wow, I liked that a lot.
Yeah.
But they were in contrast a little bit with some of his own bad shots, where I feel like he kind of delved back into his own bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that was one of the most competent parts of the movie.
Yeah. I gave it a 6 because like you were saying, they had like a lot of like cool moments or a few cool moments. It just wasn't enough for me to like, you know, become interested in it. I kind of got tired of the slow zoom in or zoom out.
Yeah.
That he would do. I think that's cool, but you
in moderation.
Moderation, it's cool. And it felt like he did it way too much. I like the moment where like she's running through the house. That's like an aerial god's eye view, and you're like following her throughout. That was cool. And moments like in the underground city where she's like the mom is like staring off into the darkness, and is like clearly the killer in there. And it's like, you know, very dark and contrasty with the lighting.
Mm-hmm.
And you get that like this, it's a slow zooms and zoom outs like feel they work perfectly in that scene.
Yeah.
But then in a lot of other scenes where there's just like two characters sitting and it's like shot reverse shot,
mm-hmm.
and talking to each other, it feels unnecessary.
Yeah.
And stupid. So, you know, 6 feels fair to me.
Yeah. Next is D for directing. I gave directing a middle of the road 5, mostly because it's all kind of culminated in this. The other things that we've been saying as far as like the audio, the cinematography, the writing, like all these things, it feels like Malignant is a culmination of the best and the worst of James Wan and his directing style. I feel like there's some, like the way that some of the cinematography is done is like kind of signature stuff that you see him do well in like The Conjuring and stuff like that, but some of it is also just like really not good. You see some of those like cramped shots or quick cuts that you don't like.
Yeah.
And the same with the music. It's like some of the music is like so good and it elevates that scene specifically. And then it immediately transitions to like one of those scenes with like the thumping, like heavy metal from the Saw movies and stuff like that instead. And it all just feels at odds with itself. It doesn't know what kind of movie it wants to be, and it doesn't feel like they tried to make it better than each individual scene.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like two different movies cropped together.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Like, it's extremely jarring, and I don't understand why he would want to have those moments where like the heavy metal music and quick cuts come in, flashing and all that.
Yeah.
It does not fit for this at all.
Mm-mm.
Then you also have moments where at the beginning, the wife, like, the, not only the line delivery, like, in the entire hospital scene and everything was incredibly poorly done, and felt like the actors had, like, no real, like, motivation or anything put towards them. They're just like, we're gonna cut out the cat, so it's stupid.
Yeah.
And also, like, right when we're introduced to Maddie, she's, like, comes into the house, and she's obviously pregnant, and Jane Swan wants you to know this, because she's, like, sitting there, like, holding her back and, like, rubbing her stomach. She's like, ooh. Ooh.
Yeah.
And then we get shots of her walking all the way throughout the house, like through different rooms and upstairs, constantly holding her back and rubbing her stomach, going, ooh, ooh.
She's very pregnant when the plot serves it, but then also, like, if she's in peril or, like, being thrown into a wall or whatever, also that's, like, totally fine. Yeah. Until it's not.
Yeah.
Like, you know, she's kind of, like, going through some abuse and stuff that is kind of like, oh, that's fine, she's still pregnant. But then all of a sudden, there's like a moment where she's supposed to get hit and not be pregnant, and all of a sudden she's not.
Yeah.
After dealing with objectively worse.
Yeah, like, and it's not only like physical stuff that can make you, like, can induce a miscarriage. It can also be like stress. Like, it's, there's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah.
You just don't think about this. Yeah. And there's also a moment where she gets up out of bed and her stomach is just straight up on her side and not even like actually like centered mm-hmm. on her body. It's just on her side. And you can tell. And you can see like the actor kind of like touches it a little bit and is like, oh. But then just kind of keeps going for mm-hmm. like the rest of the scene. I don't know why they kept that taken.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, stuff like that. You can still see like his vision, like unique visually wise and all that coming in. And I like that. And it's unique. And James Wan is like, you have to clearly have some like knowledge of the technical aspects and stuff with it to be able to like pull that off, and he does to an extent. But then like all the character stuff just falls flat on its face. It's mm-hmm. embarrassing. It's genuinely embarrassing to watch.
Yeah,
for someone that has such a big name like James Wan.
Yeah,
it's like, what are you doing, buddy? Come on,
James
Wan, are you doing?
Wan, are you doing? That's going to be, that'll just be the running gag anytime we watch a James Wan movie now.
Yeah, don't worry. I don't plan on watching any more James Wan movies.
So next is E for editing. I also gave this middle of the road. I gave it a 5 for more or less the same reasons. For every good shot, there's a bad one.
Yep.
I think
it's a 4. I gave it a 4.
I mentioned during that prison scene, I was mentioning how Upgrade does like character focused action so good.
Yeah.
And this movie wanted to do kind of a similar thing a couple of times, and it just didn't pull it off as well.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like, it's very Lee Winnell-esque in a way, which is kind of funny and poetic.
Yeah.
Like, James Wan was the one that came out and was like, chill, dog. And it's like way more like, you know, like of a household name like off the bat. And then Lee Winnell comes up like later and starts directing movies in like what, 2017, 2018?
Yeah.
And now it seems like he's, you know, the better of the two right now, as of, you know, this moment. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. But yeah, I gave it a 4 because like it'll have like the normal boring editing, and then it'll have occasionally those fun transitions like you were talking about before, like when he like slams the doctor on the ground and it like cuts to like a new area. That's cool. But then you have the stupid saw editing that I hate so much coming in. What a weird baby. Don't worry, Luna, I'll wait. But yeah, like it's an odd pairing with every decision that is made here. It just seems
at odds with itself.
Yeah, like it seems like it didn't know what it wanted to be.
Yeah,
and it's very frustrating when watching a movie.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Reflection R. Ironically, I gave this a 7. I think for as bad as everything was, it all culminated in one of the best comedies that I've seen in years.
Yeah.
This falls squarely in that category of so bad it's fun.
Yeah.
We spent most of this James Wan horror movie just kind of like laughing our butts off.
Yeah.
It was thoroughly entertaining, but not for any of the reasons they intended it to be.
No, not at all.
But yeah, I gave it a 7. I think at first, like in the first like 15 or 20 minutes, I'm like, I hate this. I'm never going to watch this again.
Yeah.
And by the end, I'm like, kind of excited to watch this again. That was hilarious.
Yeah, right? Like I gave it a 6 because yeah. like those same exact reasons. It's like, it's so stupid, it's funny.
Yeah.
Like the whole concept of the killer to begin with is hilarious, just being in the back of her head.
Yeah.
And you know, having running backwards constantly. The chase scene with the police officer and the killer through like the building and all that and down the fire escape is hilarious. Mm-hmm. One of the funniest things I've seen all year.
Yeah.
Like this movie, if anything, is so funny.
Okay. So they're going down the fire escape. They get to like a ledge or two below like ground level.
Yeah.
And she like loses her grab, her footing. And falls and like hits the dumpster and lands on the ground, and we were laughing about it. We were like, wow, that was pretty dumb. And then for whatever reason, they decided it would be a good idea for the police officer to do the exact same thing.
Yeah,
he gets down like a level or two below ground level and just like hops off,
slams down,
and hits the same dumpster and lands on his
butt. His shoulder too. Yeah, it's like boom, like right there, and then he falls off that and hits the ground. And yeah, it's like, What were you thinking was gonna happen? Like, would you just like fall off like a brick? No wonder. Like,
why would you do it that way? If you're gonna jump down, you at least have the coordination. You're not like a woman with a like psychotic brother in her head. You
that's
know?
Like running backwards.
Yeah, like we understand at least the coordination there. It was dumb, but like I understand why they did that. But you, like, you just thought it would be fine. Like, well, this weird, like, double-headed lady did it. I guess I'll try it, too.
And that, like, that also leads into, like, throughout the rest of the chase scene, the murderer is running around and just constantly kicking their way through things. They kick their way through a little window and run through. They kick their way through a bunch of bricks and run through.
It's
so funny.
It almost goes into, like, parody territory. It didn't feel like a real chase scene.
It feels like Benny Hill music should be playing in the background while this is going on.
Yeah. It went on for so long. Like, the first time she kicks through something, it was like, oh, what? Yeah. And then you kind of move on and you forget about it. And then she does it again, and you're like, wait, what?
It's
and
like then, a bunch of bricks, too.
Yeah, and then, like, the fourth or fifth time it happens, it's like, okay, this... It just kind of wins you over because you're laughing at it. And it's like, is this on purpose? Like, is this, like, self-aware? Or was this supposed to be, like, good filmmaking?
It is so genuinely funny to watch.
Yeah.
Like, it's... I'm amazed at how entertaining this movie was, at least from like the halfway point throughout. And then like you have moments where it's supposed to be like really serious when she's like in the police station just murdering all the police.
Mm-hmm.
Then she does things like throwing a chair at like like the what's her name,
and coming back to that like generic police station area, almost identical.
Oh, true, yeah.
It's just one open area with some desks with, you know, donuts and monitors on them and stuff. And they're like, all right, day over. We made a police station. And she's on... And this is like a big room. Like,
yeah,
you know, the set they made in the first Saw was understandably small.
Yeah.
The set in Malignant is like a big open floor plan police office. And it's just like a regular desk chair. She does like a spin, like an Olympic shot put thrower.
Yeah.
And like flings a chair and it flies all the way across and hits a guy in the back, and him and his partner both go sprawling.
Yeah. But also because like it's weirdly strong, like a weirdly strong moment for this character was just like a normal woman, and it's like called like her mom, even like her stepmom or adopted mother is even like, oh, you're so skinny, like later on in the movie. So somehow she has like all that strength, and they bring it up later when like the character like flips an entire hospital bed onto like the sister,
and not like just flips it, like she takes it and like flings it like
across
she does
the
with the chair. Yeah, like it flips like 3 times in the air and pins a guy to the wall.
Yeah, and then like later she's trying to like the sister's like stuck underneath it, And she's like, oh, you can't lift it. It's too heavy. She's like, if I could fling it over here, it's still my strength. I can lift it. And she just lifts it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm glad that you had the self-awareness there, mm-hmm. but it's still stupid.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. Baby on screen. It's a little bounce house over here.
If they're just listening to the podcast instead of watching, this is going to make no sense if we keep it in the edit.
Usually that's how it is. Yeah. It just makes no sense. That's okay.
But she's finally happy for a little bit. So
yeah,
that's the important part.
There you go.
You have something to say? We'll lean you into the mic. Give us your statement.
Address the people. Getting nothing. Hold on. Silent but strong.
But yeah, so do you have much more to say about Malignant or your thoughts on it?
No, that's about it. I think we covered it all. It's hilariously bad.
Yeah. So my final WAP Master score for Malignant ended up being a 47.
Mine ended up being a 40.
Okay.
It's a bad movie, but like, and if it wasn't for the final reflections, our scores respectively would be 40 for you and like 34 for me.
Yeah,
like it's a really bad movie, but because of how fun and stupid it is, we enjoyed it. And
yeah,
it brought our scores up. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, with that said, next week, your question of the week or your ranking of the week is, what are your 10 favorite directors?
Oh, yeah, I'm excited.
And next week is going to be a little bit of filler while we wait for Dear Evan Hansen. So would you like to give your thoughts on what we should do next week?
So I'm thinking either our respective bad movies,
mm-hmm.
like least favorite movies get a WAP,
mm-hmm.
or we can do, what was I saying earlier? It was
underrated,
like an underrated movie from each of us that we think deserves more like attention and fanfare.
Yeah.
So whichever one that you're thinking is, well, I'm fine with either.
I'm kind of excited and really not excited for our worst movies.
Yeah.
But I feel like that also might make for some more like fun, interesting conversation.
True. Yeah.
So I say we go with that one. I say we go with our worst movies.
Okay.
Partially just because I'm really excited for you to have to watch my least favorite movie.
What was it again? I feel like we haven't talked about
it. I will remind you so that we can reveal it next week.
Oh my god. Okay. Well. It's diabolical.
Sorry. All right. So next week we'll do a couple of WAP Masters on our least favorite movies, and we will do a ranking of our top 10 favorite directors.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, we hope you guys have a great week, and we will see you soon. Bye.
Bye.